This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. The new episode every Thursday, which is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I'll be your host for this special episode. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to kind of give you an insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respected film itself. Naz and Malik is the story of two Muslim black youths who also happen to be closeted gay men, and his antics throughout the day have drawn the attention of a local FBI agent. The film unfolds casually as we follow Naz and Malik and learn the pieces of their story as we go. It's basically a day in the life kind of film. Film takes a very simple approach to a complicated subject, and instead of hammering us over the head with a myriad of social issues, director Jay Dockendorf lets the film play out very naturally over the course of the entire day. There are no dire moments of senseless violence or sudden acts of heinous hatred. This is a movie that is meant to just leave you with your own thoughts in the story, draw your own conclusions, not force an opinion on you, which is really why I liked it. Hopefully you've seen the film by now, but if you haven't, maybe this interview will convince you to give it a shot. It's fairly spoiler-free. There's no big giveaways here, so you don't have to worry about that. But I'm speaking to Jay Dockendorf on his film, the cast, and especially the topics at hand. There's a lot of very hot button issue topics at play here. There is the issue of gay men in the Muslim community. There's an issue of African American Muslims who are being targeted by the FBI. There's several aspects that are at play, and they're handled very, very subtly. It's not, seriously, it is not a polarizing film. It is a very sweet, naturalistic film about two men struggling with something. So I'm going to let Jay speak to the rest of the film. I'm not going to sit here and hammer you over the head with what I think about the movie. Definitely, you can read my review on the site, thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is about Jay and his film. And just so we're clear, because I'm not quite sure when you're listening to this, Naz and Malik will be released on January 26th on both video on demand and DVD via Wolf Video. So keep an eye out for that, January 26th. I'm assuming when you're listening to this, it's probably already out. But just in case you're getting it right on the jump, that's when it comes out. Without further ado, here's my interview with Naz and Malik director Jay Dockendorf.
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Jay. How are you?
Well, thanks.
I actually saw your movie at South by Southwest, so it's nice that it's finally getting a release.
Oh, great. I'm glad you caught it there. I think that was one of the better times to see the film. Did you see it in the first screening at the Alamo?
I did. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Cool.
So I that think I probably, I've met you indirectly from a distance. So,
oh,
there
cool.
We go.
Yeah.
Well, before we jump into your movie, tell me a little bit about your journey into becoming a filmmaker.
I didn't really start considering making films seriously until I was a sophomore in college. I had been committed to playing music, played keyboards and piano, and was interested in writing operas and film scores and being a composer. And in high school, I was really committed to jazz and improvisation and storytelling to music, or writing music. It sounds less pretentious, I guess. and then sort of one day in college, I just had a sudden realization that I would like to broaden the scope of what I was doing to include photography and written storytelling. And that worked well because I was at a school that had a better English program, I think, at the time than the music program in terms of what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And so I switched my major very suddenly, kind of feeling as though I could do more damage in the world, and or that's the wrong way of putting it. I could have more fun in college, or I don't know, as a writing concentrator. And then from there, I got asked very soon thereafter. I was asked to produce a feature film made by some high school friends, And that actually was almost more difficult of an experience than not in the league in some ways. It really showed me how social and personality focused the experience of being a director was. And I learned a lot producing a feature film as a 19 or 20 year old that never got released or never even got screened, But was really taken with it and then started writing. I worked for the school newspaper and a local newspaper In the summers. And became pretty infatuated with the process of interviews and telling true stories. And I've tried to blend research, interviews, true stories, personal stories into the work that I've done with all the films that I've made up till now, including Nazim Malik. And so then after college, I worked for another filmmaker, helping him make documentaries in Los Angeles before moving to New York. Made a few documentaries here, made a short film based on a true story. I've made a few music videos. I don't really enjoy that process as much as any other kind of filmmaking I've done. And yes, I'm happy when they turn out all right. I think a few of them have. But then making this was, you know, the process of the culmination of the other experiences I'd had making films up until now. I interviewed a few people to set the tone for the story and get a background in the lives of the characters, a background that I don't personally share. I did a lot of research about gay Muslims and Bed-Stuy, watching other documentaries, watching other films, trying to represent those communities and those and the individuals who inspired these characters as well as possible. And I tried to learn the lesson of the independent feature that I produced when I was younger and be a director who was very open and never arrogant or inscrutable or unreachable.
Well, that's good.
But I'm sure I was at times.
Everybody is. Everybody has their moment.
Before
we get into the gay Muslim aspect of it, I mean, this is your first feature getting released to an audience, I mean, a wide audience, so to speak. And I assume for you, casting this kind of film, which is kind of like a make or break deal, has got to be a pretty stressful endeavor. So how did you know that Kerwin and Curtis were the ones for Nazim Malik?
I didn't have a clear picture in my mind of what Naz or Malik looked like. I thought they would probably be African-American, but I just knew they had to be believable as Muslims, as almost anyone could be. Given how many different people in the world are Muslim. And so I really only had a specific image of their personalities that I wanted to hit. And I saw about 100 young men for these two roles. I had several of them read both parts. And I was looking for chemistry. I was looking for a certain intelligence. I was looking for, you know, a certain kind of magnetism. What do they call it? You know, I think both of these men are very photogenic, and it's exciting to watch them play these roles. And so, and you can imagine them falling in love with each other, I think. And they work well together visually. And then once we had them read in their second round, the callbacks of casting, they clearly had the chemistry. I could have, you know, I think that it was more a larger budget, you know. Some people would have had the temptation to go out to Hollywood and try to find like rising stars and catch someone who had a certain name appeal. I think you mentioned the make or break aspect of a first film in some people's eyes, but I actually didn't really see it in those terms, and that never was a consideration for me. I was excited to find people who were on the same page as I am. You know, this is my first film. It was the first feature of Curtis and Kerwin both, and so there was a lot of equanimity between the three of us, when we were making this. And they both have lived in Brooklyn before, so they can really relate to the story and these characters. And they've ridden on these trains, they've met these people, they've seen things these characters have seen in many instances. And they gave of themselves in the rehearsal period. All of that culminated, I think, in a great pair of performances that they made with me. I'm not sure I would have had it really any other way.
When you bring up the subject matter, I mean, two gay black men, inner city, devout Muslims, they must hide their identity, struggle with religious guilt. There's a lot of hot button topics at play. I've read that this idea was sparked from your former roommate. Can you elaborate a little bit on why this was a topic that spoke to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt at the time that, bizarrely, all of these issues were present around me very closely and personally. Although I wasn't living any of them myself, living with a man who was Muslim and young and gay and closeted to his family was so remarkable and unlike any other experience I'd had. It was the most poignant, dramatic, fascinating true life story I think I'd maybe ever heard. And at the same time, we were living in Bedford-Stuyvesant, which is a historically African-American community, has a long, long and proud legacy of civil rights activism. And, there's this gentrification wave sweeping the community that is very troubling to some people. And so I don't live there anymore because of that, because when I was living there, I really got a sense of that. But there's a sense, there's an element of that to the story of Nazim Malik as well. The answer to your question really boils down to why all of these things at once. Well, they were all there when I was writing the film, and it was hard to write about anything else, especially since I'm reading these shocking, apparently true stories of rampant police surveillance of the Muslim populations of New York. This is even before Edward Snowden's revelations, as I'm writing this. And a sense that if you make a movie with these characters, black, gay, and Muslim, it's interesting. People will spend, I predicted, would spend a lot of time thinking about the issues germane to the lives of these three types of people. And then for one character to embody all of them, I think there's largely going to be someone out there who, I'm sorry, it's hard to imagine many people having the experience of all three at once. So a certain act of empathy is required to relate to the characters on almost everyone's part. And not to say there aren't that many heroic black, gay, Muslim young men or anything like that. There are. But I just think that most people who see this film will have to imagine, reimagine themselves and another person. And I was interested in doing that myself and then encouraging other people to do that as well.
Yeah, and you did a really interesting thing with the film because I think a lot of filmmakers would have been tempted to go a little bit more provoking the subject matter, where I think you really played it a lot more genuine, and I mean this as a compliment because it went against conventions a little bit, where you played it very, this is just a day in their life as they go through these things. It doesn't end in horrific violence or anything like that. I mean, it's played like this is what happens in the real world. And I like that. I mean, I'm curious why you chose to go that
Thank you.
route and not an extremely dramatic route, so to speak.
It's been interesting to see the range of reactions to that. I feel as though there are some people who, like you, are grateful that the film is more naturalistic and only sort of blasts off into a slightly psychedelic or absurd space in the third act, but doesn't end in bodily harm for the individuals per se, or the kind of gratuitous, the kind of violence that's so common in films like this. And I think there are some that long for that because they feel as though that's like something more dramatic, more exploitative, perhaps more attention grabbing is a better use of the subject matter. But I was always drawn to a certain amount of naturalism for these two characters because I wasn't necessarily all that excited about victimizing them per se. I felt like it was interesting to see how they dealt with or the various conflicts that arise. I think the big ones are the blackmail of the sister and the pressure of the FBI surveillance. I don't know. Personally, I think that sometimes the thing that can be most dramatic in a person, in any given person's life, is tension with your partner or with a very close friend. I feel like I was excited to explore like the big emotions that were just coming from their argument, an argument that grows and grows over the course of the day and then comes to a certain head in the third act.
Yeah, well, I think people are expecting that because we see all these sorts of movies where they deal with like topics like this. It almost always at the end comes to a point of some kind of horrific violence. So it was nice to just see a story unfold and it not
Yeah,
go
well,
there.
thank you. It's an interesting thing. One thing I would add is that I am fascinated by and largely respectful of good storytelling conventions and best practice passed down through the centuries. And it often seems to me like characters should go through some sort of change that can't be undone. And I think a lot of people turn to violence to satisfy that requirement. But trying to find the emotional change that can't be undone or an intellectual shift that's profound, that was a unique challenge that I think we're all trying to meet together as a production team.
My last question is, in terms of when you're doing a film of importance, is it something that weighs on you, the importance of the subject matter, or is your primary concern, I just want to tell a good story?
They became one and the same at some point. Yes, the importance of telling the film or telling the story with a certain amount of respectfulness to the subjects and the various people involved was paramount throughout the entire making of the film. But I was excited about that because I felt as though at this point in time, that's a large component of making any film right. You have the primary story, which is the one that will appear on screen, and then also part of that is the story that is told alongside the film. And, you know, in the way people talk about how the film was made, especially with small films like this, it's almost inevitably a narrative that comes up. Who was behind the film? What did they do? What kind of, you know, controversies are associated with the film, so on and so forth. There are, you know, incalculable numbers of films. For instance, Blue is the Warmest Color is a movie that comes to mind, and we talked a lot about it on set. You know, those love scenes in that film, this, you know, Palme d'Or winning, highly acclaimed movie, apparently were shot with a certain reckless abandon for the feelings of the actresses involved. And the actresses were specifically asked to improvise these long, involved lesbian sex scenes. At some point, that became deeply uncomfortable for them, and they felt exploited by that process. We tried to learn from that and choreographed our love scenes very tightly so that our two actors felt like they were being treated with a certain kind of dignity and not being asked to suddenly become enamored of each other in this physical way that's not professional or not required of two actors who are expected to learn their lines and give roles and not necessarily expected to improvise something that I could have done my part as director to help them through or guide them through.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I know I got to let you go. I just want to wish you luck on the release and best wishes.
Thank you very much, Aaron. I'm really glad you took the chance to ask some questions. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. There you go, guys. That was my interview with Jay Dockendorf, director of Naz and Malik, which is available on video on demand right now. I recommend you check it out. I'm telling you, I mean, it's not a polarizing film. It's not a hitting you over the head over and over with, you got to respect gays, you got to respect gay Muslims, you got to respect, you know, it's not one of those films. It's a very subtle, very sweet, very natural film that I hope more of you check out. I really enjoyed it. It really felt like I was just hanging out with these two guys throughout the day. It was that kind of movie. All right, well, once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers like this in the world of independent cinema when we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. I look forward to what Jay has to offer in the future. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or through whatever podcast app you currently use. Our normal show has a new episode every Thursday, and it's also available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater, or you watch Naz and Malik on demand, buy popcorn.